This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try.
Heathens, doubters, and skeptics, welcome to Free Thought Radio. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist. This is the May 4th, 2013 broadcast of Free Thought Radio.
So may the 4th be with you.
Yes, May the 4th. May the 4th of reason be with you. So are you making the jokes now, Annie Laurie?
Well, that's an old joke, but today is the only day you can tell it.
As I was saying, this is the first Saturday in May 2013, Free Thought Radio is produced in Madison, Wisconsin. And we also podcast, and we broadcast in other parts of the country as well. Hello to all you listeners in Monterey, California, and in New York State, and the Grand Rapids, Michigan area, and in Columbia, Missouri.
Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of FFRF, the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and we are celebrating our 35th anniversary year, went national in April of 1978. So this is 35 years and counting as a national group. And we work to keep government free from religion, and we work to represent the viewpoint of those of us who are personally free from religion, be you an atheist, agnostic, skeptic, secular humanist, as we like to joke, whatever you call yourselves, we all disbelieve in the same God.
This week, May the 7th, marks the birthday of two non-believing composers. Johannes Brahms was born in Germany on May 7th, 1833, and Peter Tchaikovsky was born in Russia on May 7th, 1840. Hey, you could actually say, May the 7th chord resolve up a 4th. Brahms and Tchaikovsky were both agnostics. You can read about their lives and their views and hundreds of other non-believers at the Freedom From Religion Foundation's Free Thought of the Day page at ffrf.org/day. And in today's show, listen for some of Brahms's and Tchaikovsky's music.
So, Dan, do you have a joke today?
Well, actually, I was thinking I had a joke I wanted to tell last Easter.
Well, if you believe Jesus existed and therefore that he stayed on the earth for 40 more days, you could just squeeze it in. So what is that joke?
If Jesus knew how many people do not believe in his resurrection, he would roll over in his grave.
So do you think Jesus really existed?
Actually, we're going to talk about that today. Our guest in the second half of today's show, Robert M. Price, Bob Price, is one scholar who is convinced that Jesus did not exist.
And one of Dr. Price's books, Jesus is Dead, was censored this week in Florida. And briefly, our new chapter there, the Central Florida Freethought Community, was slated to distribute Freethought literature to counter Bible distribution in the public schools. Earlier this spring, it was so-called passive distribution, where evangelists were allowed to set up a table and have Bibles. And so our chapter, David Williamson, we've had him on the show, worked with Andrew Seidel, our attorney, to arrange with other groups as well a distribution. But we found that many of the books and pamphlets that we put forward were censored. And among them was Sam Harris's Letters to a Christian. And Bob Price's book, Jesus is Dead. So stay tuned about what we're going to do about that.
Well, like me, Robert Price used to be a preacher. He's now a non-believer. And it turns out there are many former and active ministers and priests who have abandoned the supernatural.
And we have talked about the Clergy Project before, which Dan is a founder of. And one of the most moving stories to come out of that is Jerry DeWitt, who was until very recently a Pentecostal preacher. He's from Louisiana, and he's now an atheist. And we spoke with Jerry on Free Thought Radio just a few weeks after he deconverted or graduated from the pulpit last year. And while his views became stronger, his personal life started falling to pieces.
And that's what can happen when a preacher announces to his community that he no longer believes. During the Clergy Project panel we had at our FFRF convention last fall in Portland, Jerry stood up at the podium in front of 900 atheists and agnostics and told his story.
Well, he didn't actually tell it. It's very funny. He presented it in a way that only Jerry can.
I've got a couple of things I can do here in the next 10 minutes. I can tell the story once again. And I will. Or, with your permission, I can preach the story in the next 10 minutes. Is that okay, Deacon Dan? Now, there will be times when you will have to participate. And so, just in advance, know that for 25 years, I said, can I get an amen? And so, what we'll do this afternoon is, I will say, can I get a Darwin? So now you know your part. I found it somewhat boring to always preach to the choir. And so, knowing that this is being videoed, I know that there are hundreds, if not maybe thousands, of brave individuals just like the ones that are on this platform that will see this video. So we're going to have a small evangelistic meeting within the next 7 or 8 minutes, and we're going to give a call out to the doubter. Can I get a Darwin? This is going to work. You'll notice the ushers will be making their way. It's full circle for me to be here this afternoon. Brothers and sisters, it's truly a privilege. If you've never heard the story, if you've never lived through this somewhat and sometimes sad tale, I want you to know there are some high points, so just stay with me as we make our way through this journey. There were ups, there were downs, and I regret to say there were ins and there were outs. There were times of being somewhat disillusioned and confused, but always, always being moved and motivated and inspired, if you will, by love for humanity and a love for truth. From the very beginning, at the earliest age that I can remember, I was surrounded by religion. And not just any religion, mind you, but the religion that I'm obviously enjoying at this moment. Good, old-fashioned, heartfelt, southern fried, barbecued all the way to the bone, Pentecostal religion. Can I get a Darwin? I'm going to tell you, it's something a little bit better than the Baptists have ever been baptized with. The Pentecostals have got a method that the Methodists maybe not understand. I'm sorry, Sister Teresa. From the very beginning, I was surrounded by religion. Some of my earliest memories was laying my head upon my grandmother's lap and her praying in other tongues for my earache. Some of the first words I heard were unintelligible. Much like some of the ones you'll hear in the next 3 to 4 minutes. And so you may ask yourself, how is it that a person can come this far, that maybe he once stood in a Pentecostal pulpit and preached what he believed to be the gospel, but now he's here somehow celebrating the notion that the future may be one day free of religion? Can I get a Darwin? And then those that are here that's never experienced this may be asking yourselves, how can someone who seems to be so tall and good looking, handsome and <laughs> When I want your opinion, I'll give it to you. Haven't you ever been to church? You may be asking yourself, how is it that someone who seems to be so intelligent could ever believe such foolish things? I'll tell you, many times it has to start on your grandmother's lap. And a brain becomes wired, and reality becomes skewed, and lives become shaped, and decisions are made without always having the best information. Can I get a Darwin? So for 25 years, I traveled down that path, and I will tell you, doubter, I wanted the same thing that you've always wanted. I wanted God to be just as real to me as you're real to me. I wanted the Creator of heaven and earth to move into my life and to relieve in any way possible the sufferings that I was experiencing that I saw so many of my loved ones experiencing. Because I always loved humanity, and I always loved truth. Can I get another Darwin? Obviously, I wouldn't be here wasting your valuable time if I had found what I was looking for. Now, there's a reason that I tried so hard to find what I was looking for, because starting off from my grandmother's knee, I had been told that there was no hope outside of faith. I was told that there was absolutely no way to ever have happiness outside of faith. I was told that only within faith would you find a joy that was unspeakable and that was full of glory. I was told that outside of faith, humanity didn't have a hope. But I'm here this afternoon, not just bearing a message, but living in the proof of the fact that there is hope after faith. Can I get a Darwin?
And that is former Pentecostal preacher Jerry DeWitt, who's now an atheist, giving his talk in a preacher style at the FFRF convention in 2012.
And we'll hear the rest of Jerry DeWitt's sermon, that's in quotes, when we come back after the break. I'm Annie Laurie Geller with the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
And I'm Dan Barker. We'll also talk later with Robert Price, another former preacher, an author, fellow of the Jesus Seminar, who doesn't think Jesus even existed. Stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio.
And happy birthday, Brahms. This is Symphony No. 1, and he was a very stout non-believer.
This is Free Thought Radio with your hosts, Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And if you're just tuning in and wondering what you're listening to, we're in the middle of a quote-unquote sermon. What if an atheist talked like a preacher? So let's continue listening to former Pentecostal preacher, who's now an atheist, Jerry DeWitt, talking before 900 atheists and agnostics at FFRF's 2012 convention in Portland, Oregon, last fall.
I know, just like many of you, I was told that without faith, you would never have happiness. You would never be content. But what I found in the faith of my family and of the tradition of my childhood was that there was no stopping point. You could never be content because you could never be good enough. Not only were you not allowed to express your own individuality, but the name of the game was to pretend you were someone who had died 2,000 years ago. And how could you ever live up to such a standard? So there was no contentment in religion. No wonder we seek the freedom that we desire from it. I'm here to tell you that I'm living proof that there is happiness after faith. Now that's when the ushers would know to make their move. There's still room in these pockets for you. I was told that there was no positive outlook without faith, that without God, without religion, there was no reason to even dream of a positive future. It would be gloom and doom. It would be the apocalypse every day of the week without religion. But I'm here to tell you that I've got more optimism flowing out of my heart now than I ever had. And it's because of conventions like this. It's because of groups made up of young and old, black and white. Every single aspect, the whole broad spectrum of humanity is now being represented in a secular movement. And there's hope and there's optimism where there never was for me in religion. Can I get a Darwin?
Darwin!
The last two points would be this. If you're not paying attention, I'm spelling the word hope. Because there's hope after faith, and it's the name of my book, and I want you to remember that. P stands for perseverance. The greatest damage that religion has done to humanity is that it has taught us that it's okay to be passive. It's taught us that we can somehow clear our conscience and not truly be our brother's keeper by simply bowing a knee and whispering to an imaginary friend, and that somehow that's good enough. It's taught us that there's a divine plan. There's something larger and bigger than us, and this whole ball of wax is completely out of our control, and there's nothing we can do about it. So why should we, other than maybe pray? But I come to you and say there's hope after faith. And this hope that I have after faith has made me persevere. It's made me persevere through the worst year of my life. In May of last year, I reached out and my own personal Jesus, Dan Barker, reached back. That one belongs to you. He told me every time I say that, I owe him tithes. And so through this last year, by leaving this career, if you will, and coming out publicly, I've lost friends. I've lost family, including my marriage. I've lost finances, total bankruptcy. As a matter of fact, I have a hearing the middle of next week about the bankruptcy case. And I've lost favor throughout the community. I was our mayor's chief of staff. I was the director of community service. Imagine that, somehow politics and religion mixing. And all these things are now gone. And what is a preacher to do if he can't pray anymore? He's to be a good human being and to persevere. And I'll admit to you, with the help of friends, with the help of the Clergy Project, with the help of Dan Barker, with the help of so many beautiful people like you, I have found a strength that I didn't know I possessed because I had been giving the credit away to the wrong person. And last but definitely not least, we're told in this country, in the 21st century of all times, we're told that without God, you can't be good and you can't be good to your neighbor. And what I have found is just the opposite. In hope, E stands for empathy. Because religion gives you a different E. It gives you an ego. And it makes you feel special. And it gives you an excuse to overlook the sufferings of so many other people because it's really God's problem and it's not your fault if somehow you are more privileged than the next guy. And so now that I'm out of religion, I have more empathy for the rest of humanity than I ever had. But what I will tell you, and it's what I say to you doubters that are hiding behind the pulpit, it's not easy. It may be worse than you can imagine. But I can assure you that if this little Southern fried preacher from the backwaters of Louisiana can do it, then for everyone, everywhere, there's hope after faith. Can I get a Darwin?
And that is Jerry DeWitt, former Pentecostal preacher who's now an atheist. His new book coming out in July is Hope After Faith.
And we'll have Jerry back on Free Thought Radio when the book is closer to coming out. And coming up, we have another preacher who gave up the faith. So, Dan, that's with there's a trio of you with you here, too. Robert Price is a scholar, professor, philosopher, member of the Jesus Seminar, whose book was just censored by the Orange County, Florida School District in FFRF's campaign to counter Bible distribution there.
And we'll talk about that with Bob Price and also about why he thinks Jesus never existed. Stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio.
Ask for a sample issue of Free Thought today and find out more about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at FFRF.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we're co-directors of the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
And we have on the phone with us today from North Carolina, Robert Price, Bob Price. He is a fellow, a real scholar, a fellow in the Jesus Seminar, a fellow in the Committee for the Scientific Examination of Religion. He's a professor of theology, and that'll be interesting to ask him about. How can a non-believer teach theology? Professor of theology and scriptural studies at Coleman Theological Seminary, founder and editor of the Journal of Higher Criticism. He's a host of The Human Bible and The Bible Geek. He's a research fellow for the Center for Inquiry Institute. He's authored many books. We've had Bob on the show before. Deconstructing Jesus, The Reason-Driven Life, which I quoted from in my book, The Good Atheist. Jesus is Dead, and I love this title, Inerrant the Wind, Evangelical Crisis and Biblical Authority. The Case Against the Case for Christ, which is answering Strobel's book. And The Amazing Colossal Apostle, The Search for the Historical Paul. So welcome back to Free Thought Radio, Bob.
It's great to be back.
Yes, I always enjoy reading your things. Now, the reason we're inviting you on this week is because one of your books was censored, and it's one of the books that I actually don't have. I have about eight of your books. We're distributing Free Thought literature in Orlando area public schools, and they said your book wasn't good enough. Here's what they said, and maybe I can ask you to comment about this. The book Jesus is Dead by Robert Price. This book may not be distributed in the high schools in Orlando area. The district has determined this book will cause a substantial disruption. The district's administration will not permit the distribution of materials which insult the leaders of other religions. The claim that Jesus was not crucified or resurrected is age inappropriate for the maturity levels of many of the students in high school. So what do you think about that, Bob?
Well, I don't know where they're getting the idea that I'm insulting any religious leaders, Christian or otherwise. I sort of take trouble not to do that because I don't think these things are personal issues, shouldn't be anyway, and I try to keep that out of it and just deal with the issues. As to the age appropriateness, I have a hunch what they mean is that it may get people thinking in the wrong direction while they're impressionable youths, but of course we don't think there is any wrong direction as long as you're thinking, let 100 flowers bloom. So on the whole, I have to say it's kind of a strange backdoor honor to be on a kind of index of prohibited books.
Yeah, I think you should be honored. And of course, if your book is not age appropriate, then how on earth did the Orlando schools say that the Bible is age appropriate for high schoolers?
I think they sort of forgot some of the stuff that's in it, especially that darn book of Judges.
Maybe we didn't explain correctly. The protest that happened on May the 2nd was in response to the fact that the Orange County, Florida's public schools allowed
passive distribution of the Bible.
In fact, it was the NIV Bible, a very evangelical. They allowed that in the schools in January. So our chapter is protesting. We don't think the school should be pushing atheist literature either, but we're protesting by putting free thought material in the same schools.
Right.
And the Bible, of course, says that Jesus was crucified and did resurrect from the dead, and that is age appropriate, apparently, for high school students.
Yeah, if what you want to do is to just keep them down on the farm cognitively, which, of course, is what people want to do, it's sad. They don't seem to understand what education is. When I was in high school, my physics teacher suggested, I mean, I was a loudmouth fundy back then, he suggested I read Hugh Schoenfield's The Passover Plot as a challenge and another viewpoint, and I did, and I was a bit troubled by it, but I told him I was glad he had suggested it. I don't think it was inappropriate, and it's too bad they're trying to shut down inquiry.
Now, since they did stop the distribution of your book, Jesus is Dead, which I understand came out in 2007. Can you briefly recap for listeners what your book's about, what the premise is?
Yeah, it's a bunch of debate statements, book reviews, and a few articles mainly dealing with the resurrection and why I think it simply didn't happen, or at least that the arguments offered to prove it are ineffective. And so it's not saying that the resurrection of Jesus is a bad idea. Let's hope he didn't rise. There's none of that in it. It's just saying, let's take a second look at this and at the debates about it. I love the cover art, which Frank Zindler's wife, Anne, came up with. It's the Pietà, and it says above it, Jesus is dead, and it has this beautifully Zen-like double effect. You think, the title, oh, this is blasphemy, and then you look at this famous statue of Mary in compassion with the dead body of her son, and say, oh, well, yeah, of course, that's a biblical idea, but wait a minute. And it sort of forces you to ask, well, what is the problem with this, if anything?
So you're obviously a Bible scholar and into the languages and into all of the history of the formation of the religion, but you also teach theology, and I'm intrigued by that. I've often said that theology is a subject with no object. So how can someone who doesn't believe in the object teach the subject?
Well, there's, as you know from your own studies, there's a long and intricate interplay of ideas, much as in the history of philosophy. And I think, for instance, philosophically, that idealistic metaphysics from Plato onward is ill-founded. At least it's not convincing to me, but I don't disrespect the great minds that have looked at things that way, and I think it's worth knowing the history of thought and the logic of the systems that have been created. And so the way I deal with theology, and I have three courses on that, I just say here is the tradition and how it developed, here are the options and why people think as they do. And most of the students are not traditional Christians anyway. They're into a kind of new thought sort of a thing where they already don't take the Bible literally. And I make no secret of what I think, and they kind of value me as a gadfly, so I find it fascinating to just explore the tradition with them. And I found the same thing teaching Moonies and all sorts of people. They're open minds in a lot of places. It would surprise you.
Now, to get back to this whole idea of the historicity of Jesus, a typical Christian today has not been exposed intellectually to this idea that there isn't secular evidence for the existence of a Jesus. They haven't been taught to critically think. They're really shocked if you even propose that there was no historic Jesus. So, briefly, what would you tell that person?
Well, I'd say that you can't rest with people citing Josephus and Tacitus and a couple of other ancient writers as if you were citing the Bible. There's much more to both types of sources than that. You have to sift them critically, and it turns out that, as I view it, the stories of Jesus seem to be rewrites of various Old Testament stories about Elijah, David, Moses, etc. Or, I mean, they might not be, but you have to ask yourself, what's more likely, what's more probable, that somebody copied well-known stories, as Joseph Smith did to write the Book of Mormon, or that there was a man like Superman or Captain Marvel working miracles? It comes down to that. Plus, there are other God men, avatars, incarnations, resurrected saviors, right in the same neighborhood at the same time. And it just seems the height of special pleading to say, well, okay, these other ones are myths and fictions, but my favorite is real. It's as if you had a bunch of comic book geeks, among whom I happily number myself, debating, and one guy said, you know, Superman didn't exist, Batman didn't exist, but the Martian Manhunter, now he was real. What could possibly make you think so? And I think here, of course, people think that Jesus alone was real, not Hercules, et cetera, because obviously they were raised to think that, though you never know what doubt may lurk. My wife, Carol, was teaching a bunch of, I think, first graders, and the topic of Santa Claus came up, and some kids didn't believe it, and she knew there'd be hell to pay if she even allowed this to go on. Parental reactions, but before she could steer the conversation elsewhere, one little girl said, you gotta believe in Santa or you won't believe in Jesus. Holy mackerel! Out of the mouths of babes. So I think there may be a little more doubt going on, and that's why you have the urgency of people saying, oh, no, that myth idea, that's stupid.
You mentioned,
nobody can think that.
You mentioned Josephus and Tacitus, but of course, from the life of Jesus himself, there was no contemporary historical confirmation. And Josephus and Tacitus were, what, 60, 80 years later? About the same amount of time when the stories of Paul Bunyan were started to be written after that same story happened. So you believe one but not the other. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, these guys, it would be different if you had something from a contemporary, just a little note and a brief letter, such as we found in the Sands of Egypt, where somebody writes home and says, I heard the famous Jesus of Nazareth speak today. That's all it would take to establish that there had been a historical Jesus, as there may have been, but in fact, there really isn't any evidence, and you just can't go ahead and assume that this Superman-like character was real, especially in the utter absence of any kind of objective evidence.
Well, even the very existence of Nazareth is up for debate, isn't it?
That's right, and there, that cuts to a nerve. A lot of people like Bart Ehrman and others just cannot entertain that possibility, and I think it's because they just don't like the consensus being disturbed, because the arguments that Renee Salm and others and Frank Zindler have given seem pretty convincing to me. Who knows? Evidence might turn up. But,
well, we have to take a break, Bob. We have to take a break here. We're talking with Robert Price about the existence of Jesus, the historicity of the Bible.
A former Baptist minister and now a scholar.
Yes, and we'll continue our talk. And I want to talk about Bart Ehrman and his book as well, because you've written a rebuttal. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. Stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio.
And why are we listening to Tchaikovsky?
It's his birthday this week.
And he was a freethinker.
Yes.
The things that you're liable to read in the Bible, it ain't necessarily so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And we're continuing our talk with Robert M. Price, with Bob Price, whom we've had on the show before, an author.
A former Baptist preacher.
Yes. Hallelujah.
Hallelujah. Who a former evangelical believer, who is now a non-believer, who teaches the Bible and who teaches theology and has written extensively about all of this. On a previous show, we've had Bart Ehrman to talk about his book, God's Problem, a wonderful book about the problem of evil in the Bible. And I admire and love many of Bart Ehrman's writings, especially the forgery book that he wrote. I was just reading the Scientific American catalog, Scientific American Books catalog, which I've been ordering for years. And just this morning, I saw on page 17, an advertisement for Bart Ehrman's new book, Did Jesus Exist? And listen to this, Bob, what they say. Bible expert and historian Bart Ehrman uses rigorous research to answer this controversial question with a resounding yes, although the historical Jesus he uncovers may be very different from the one you know. And then just last week, I got in the mail a book edited by you, Bob, answering Bart Ehrman. So I know there's some very healthy disagreement among scholars on all, as there should be, on all sides. But what do you say to Bart Ehrman?
Well, I regret that, unlike his other books, whether scholarly or popular, this one doesn't really seem to embody a lot of homework. He takes on myself, Frank Zindler, Earl Doherty, and a number of others, and in a way that really misrepresents what we say and contemptuously dismisses us as a bunch of cranks, something he never does toward anybody else. And it's very hard to see why, given the fact that his other books are so minimalistic and skeptical about the Gospels and their accuracy, that many readers have said, well, what happened? Did you get converted on the road to Damascus? And so I hope that our rebuttal book will occasion genuine scholarly exchange, because I fear if his book, Did Jesus Exist, does not embody that. So I found it very disappointing.
Well, now, I kind of thought, and I haven't read his book, but I kind of thought it's like some of us non-believers are convinced that the New Testament Jesus did not exist. That character is a cartoon, a caricature, the miracle worker and the Savior and the Son of God and all that stuff. Obviously, that Jesus, and that was the Jesus that you and I used to believe in when we were evangelicals. That Jesus does not exist, and I'm pretty sure Bart agrees with that. But he thinks there may have been. And I think you might agree that you can't totally rule out the possibility that there may have been a first century self-proclaimed Messiah named Yeshua. Like there were others. There was the Judas the Christ and the Theodas the Christ.
Oh, that's so, right. I mean, there's no way to hold it as a dogma that there was no Jesus.
So what other evidences are there besides the lack of historical confirmation and the lateness of the extra-biblical reports? What do you think about McDonald's idea that the author of Mark, the first gospel, used Homer as a template for some of his stories, for example? You see pagan precedents within the New Testament writings.
Well, you do. I think he may be stretching it a bit, but that's okay. You naturally try out the theory and see how far you can take it. But there are certain parts of Mark that do seem clearly to be based on the Iliad and the Odyssey. And MacDonald makes a great case. I think you can show that the parable of the prodigal son in Luke is based on sections of the Odyssey, and there's other materials. You can easily show that the book of Acts is heavily influenced by Euripides the Bacchae and Aeneas and other works. And the problem is that the stories in all the New Testament narratives look so much like stories that everyone admits are legendary and fictitious that it's special pleading. And that wouldn't rule out a historical Jesus if there were also some kind of residual secular, for want of a better word, biographical data. Like Caesar Augustus was mythologized, but he's inextricably woven into world history. The apparent links between Jesus and world history, mentions of Pilate, Herod, and so on, do not hold up under examination, as scholars have known for centuries, mythicism aside. And there's just nothing else but the mythic type material. So you might say there was a historical Jesus who's completely receded into the fog, but then we'd need some reason to posit that. And so my position is that the burden of proof is on someone like Bart Ehrman to say not only could there have been, but there most likely was. And he simply, in my view, is far from bearing that burden. He's content to just go with the scholarly consensus, so-called.
Now, speaking of somebody that we really do know existed and we can admire, that would be Robert Greene Ingersoll. Mm. We hear that's the latest, you're going to be working on a book about Robert Ingersoll. So what's new to write about him?
Well, what I want to do is, in fact, I've done a chapter of this already. I want to look at the various things he says about the Bible and religion, institutions, doctrines, etc., and ask, was he right about this? I mean, obviously, he didn't have the time to get into biblical criticism, which wasn't all that advanced at the time anyway. How accurate in our terms was he, and is there any more to say about this? Does he give short shrift to the Trinity or whatever? And I think generally he doesn't, but that it's a way of saying, how well does he hold up? And I think he holds up pretty well.
Well, he has that great poem about the Trinity.
It's a big recitation.
The recitation that Dan Yeah, put some of it to music.
I set it to music once.
Celestial multiplication table.
Yeah, that. Oh, that thing is, that's such a funny thing, and it's hard to set to music, but if you want to hear that, it's on our Friendly Neighborhood Atheist
CD. Oh, boy, that's great.
CD. But Ingersoll read the Bible for himself, and he came, you know, like Thomas Paine did. Thomas Paine just took his own eyes, set of eyes, and he read the book for what it said, and he wrote his own opinions.
And by the way, some of Thomas Paine was not censored by the Orlando Public Schools. It wasn't the entire Age of Reason, but... The person who named our country at least got an entree into the schools.
Oh, boy, the ironies.
Well, we do know what Robert Ingersoll's views were on baptism. A reporter once asked him, "What do you think about baptism?" And Ingersoll said, "With soap, it is a good thing."
Oh, boy, he's great.
So... So Ingersoll and Jesus and theology and philosophy, you're keeping very, very busy these days.
And
Robert,
how do people find your books? Do you have a website?
Yes, robertmprice.mindvendor.com.
Well, we're out of time. Thank you so much, Bob.
Thank you.
And it's Tchaikovsky's birthday on May the 7th, 1840. We want to also thank Dave McCann, our producer and engineer, and Buzz Kemper, the announcer. This show is recorded in Madison, Wisconsin. Find out all you need to know about our show at ffrf.org/radio.
Ask for more information at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021, or better yet, join us. Do 10 issues of our newspaper, 24 pages, Free Thought Today, with lots more information and materials elaborating on what we talk about on the radio. Tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker. I hope someday